Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com.
Hey everybody, I'm James Kleiman. I'm the managing editor at HousingWire, and we have a fantastic show for you all today. Of course, the news broke on Friday that the National Association of Realtors had reached a preliminary settlement that brings all litigation with home sellers to a close. It's a $418 million settlement that, if approved, would take effect in mid-July. And I think it has the power to potentially change how agents work and get paid. And so a couple points before we get started. The agreement does ban the NAR from establishing any rules that allow a seller's agent to set compensation for a buyer's agent. And so the so-called participation rule that triggered all this litigation and also scrutiny from the Department of Justice is gone. The NAR also prohibited agents and broker compensation from appearing in the MLS fields, and any MLS participants working with buyers must enter into a written buyer-broker contract. And so all of that is hugely significant. I have never seen more hot takes after a big piece of news is dropped. I've heard people say this agreement wouldn't actually change much of anything, that it just moves the same money around and buyer agents are going to get paid through seller concessions. Basically, quit freaking out, right? I've also heard others say there's going to be a lot of second order and third order impacts here. This will affect the whole ecosystem, but they'll be a little bit more muted. Most deals will still look like they always have. And then on the total opposite end of the spectrum, I've heard people say this settlement would bring commissions down potentially by $30 billion a year, and it's going to wipe out half the agents in America. And also, good riddance, right? So whatever your reaction might be, there's so much confusion about what happens next and what opportunities and threats might come with these potential changes. So having said all of that, I wanted to introduce you guys to Pete Voss. He's been living with these proposed new rules for the better part of a year. And Pete is the co-founder and broker owner of 3% Listing Company, headquartered in Iowa. And he's going to share his experiences and thoughts on representing sellers who will not commit to paying buyer's agents immediately. And we'll get into the nuances of that in just a sec. So, Pete, thank you so much for being with me.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me, James. Super excited about kind of sharing our experience and where we came from and how we came to this model.
And so this is a totally fascinating story, and I want to get into it. So could you start by describing your model and how it all gets started?
Yeah, so our model is we only charge the listing side of the commission. So our commission rate is in our name, 3% listing company. And so when we go into listing presentations, sitting down with sellers, we're explaining to them, you know, the difference between us and the traditional real estate model in that we just don't require that seller to pay the buyer's agent up front. So we only collect the sell side of the commission, and then we leave the buy side for the agent up to an agreement between the buyer and their agent. And then when they write their offer, they're submitting a request from the buyer to the seller that says, hey, you know, we have this buyer's agent, we have this, this, in fact, a bill that we need to pay. And we would like the seller to compensate our agent a certain dollar figure or a certain percentage. And then it allows the seller to kind of work those numbers into their negotiation. So they know how much they're paying that buyer's agent when they're getting that offer, but they also know how much that buyer is willing to pay them for the house. And so they're able to kind of see all of the factors that are going into their bottom line all at the same time. And it gives them a much better negotiating position in dealing with that offer and knowing kind of what they're actually going to be walking away with.
When we talk about this NAR settlement, I think a lot of transactions could end up looking like this starting mid-July. And so you have a sell side that hasn't made any commitment to pay the buy side agent. And so you're, in your experience, what do those conversations look like with clients? And also, what do those conversations look like on the other side of the deal?
Yeah. So the conversation, the one thing that we always like to discuss is we're not telling sellers that they're only paying 3% commission. We're telling them, hey, we are, there's a high likelihood that they'll pay more in a commission, but we also explain to them that they are going to have the benefit of being able to negotiate how much they want to contribute towards that buyer's agent, as opposed to just agreeing upfront when they list the property that they're going to contribute a certain amount or a certain percentage to the buyer's agent. And realistically, the way that the traditional mortgage is right now, or the traditional model is right now, it's not even that the seller themselves is saying, hey, I want to contribute this to the listing agent and this to the buyer agent. They're saying, hey, I'm getting charged this by the listing agent. And then the listing agent is deciding how much they want to contribute to the buyer's agent as really just an incentive to sell the house.
Yeah, I think that's a really important distinction, because on the one hand, there is this myth, right, about the 6% standard commission. But on the other hand, I don't think that you can argue that real estate agent commissions have not been pretty sticky for decades, whether they're at 5% in the local market, 5.25, 5.5, 5.75, 6, whatever it might be. And so the structure of the NAR rules have basically ensured that you go into this as a seller, and in almost every case, you're committing upfront to paying 5% or 6% before you know anything about the sales process, right? Before you know anything about the buyer or the competency of the agent. And so what's proposed here, I think, really could usher in massive change. And I can't imagine many buyer's agents are happy about it. So maybe could you walk me through this, as how this has worked for you in Illinois and in Iowa over the last 9 or so months?
Yeah. Yeah. So just last June was when we opened up. It definitely has been a struggle. We've had a lot of conversations with agents. Some of them just curiosity about what our model is, how are they going to get paid. Others that have been a little bit more strained in that conversation. When we talk to the buyer's agents, first off, how much NAR, especially in the last 18 to 24 months, how much NAR has been pushing the idea of using exclusive buyer's agreements for buyer's agents. Those agreements, having those in place with your buyer should be telling your buyer, hey, this is what my services cost as a buyer's agent. And that's the conversation that we're still having with all of our buyers. Hey, this is what our services cost as a buyer's agent. And then we explain, we're going to do our best to try and negotiate our fees into the transaction so that you're not having, as a buyer, you're not having to pay these fees out of pocket. But there is also the conversation that says, if the seller refuses to pay these, this is a liability. This is a bill that you're going to have to pay. But doing our due diligence with those buyers and with that seller in the transaction of trying to work everything into that deal. And we've had really good luck with that. We've had great conversations with clients. We've had really good conversations with buyer's agents. Buyer's agents that are writing offers, that are quality offers, that are still asking for a seller to contribute a certain amount, a percentage, or a certain dollar figure to them as a buyer's compensation. The great part about it is that the seller, many of our sellers have been able to negotiate that back into the deal. So while, yes, they are paying a buyer's commission, they might be getting more for their house, which is offsetting that that commission. So really, the seller is able to keep more of their equity. And so really, our whole model just stemmed from the idea that we saw that sellers were responsible for paying both the seller and the buyer's agent, even when a buyer's agent is negotiating against them. And to me, that just didn't seem fair. I can't think of another industry somebody is expected to pay the representation of somebody who's, actively negotiating against them. And so that's really where the thought process came from for this model, was, everybody paying their fair share of their representation. So if you want to be represented, there is a cost that comes with that. And then just how can we make the deal happen? How can we keep the deal together and keeping everybody involved and making sure everybody gets paid for doing what they're doing? And so that's really at the heart of our business model as to why we did it this way. And I know it's frustrating for a lot of agents because it is different. But I see it as the most equal and fair way to get everybody paid for the service that they're providing and receiving.
I feel like we could talk for hours or days about potential existential questions that the settlement brings to the surface, but I really want to talk about the practical realities. Everyday agents, they're absolutely freaking out. They're panicking. This is crazy. This has never happened. So maybe could you share how this has worked for your brokerage in Iowa and in Illinois? How often are your clients compensating the buy-side agent?
Yeah, I would say the majority are compensating the buyer's agent. They understand that a buyer's agent is bringing the buyer, is showing the house, that they're the ones that are writing the offer. They understand and they see that as a service. But they also have the opportunity to offset that. And I think that's a little bit where this misconception of who's paying who, you know, we operate in such a kind of cloudy area of who is paying for who and what does it cost for a buyer to use a buyer's agent in the past that now, you know, once we get everything out on the table and we have an understanding of what the cost is to use a buyer's agent, I feel like it just creates a much more transparent transaction and process for everybody. They know who's working for me and I know how much I'm paying them. And I think that at the end really, really helps to alleviate any of the questions. That old answer of agents that were telling buyers, well, it doesn't cost you anything to use an agent because the seller pays all the commission. Well, that's just not true. That the seller is paying it, but did they sell the house for more than what they would have had they not paid a buyer's agent? So, it's just difficult to figure out who's paying for what in the former model. And that's what we like about our model.
Right. So the new potential model, it could be a lot cleaner, right? If this settlement does come to pass, there are obviously workarounds by having the sell side potentially pay it as a closing cost. And I think a lot of sellers and buyers could move the sale price up or down if they need to make the math work. Though obviously the appraisal is going to be a lot more important going forward. So why don't we talk a little bit about multiple offer situations? I think that's where a lot of this could get really interesting. Sellers that feel like they have the upper hand and don't need to pay a buyer. Have you had situations where, you know, the dynamic has played out and your client just won't offer anything to the buy side?
So we haven't run into an area that a seller refused to pay a buyer's agent. We have run into multiple offers where we received offers from buyers that the agent was not requesting the seller to pay a buyer's agent. So we don't know the details on the other side of that, how, you know, whatever that agreement was, the buyer was going to pay them out of their own pocket or whatever that agreement is, because that's between the buyer and their buyer's agent. But I can tell you that on a multiple offers and multiple offers, sorry, that the seller looked at it, and that was a huge leg up for those offers because, all other terms the same. If one offer has the seller paying a buyer's agent and one offer doesn't, you know, 2 or 3% or whatever that requested amount is, that's a significant amount of money to that seller and could be the big difference between, picking this offer over a different one.
Do you see any scenarios where the buyer has a clear advantage and they say, look, we're not going to pay the buyer agents at all? You know, no matter what happens, we still have 10 bids to choose from and the market will adapt and function, you know, relatively speaking, as normal. Instead of the buyer bidding, say, $20,000 $30,000 over the list price, they'll say, you know what? We don't need you to pay for my representation. I'm just going to change the listing price. I just feel like there are so many interesting new scenarios at play here that negotiation is going to be a lot more important because the rules are quite a bit different, right?
Yeah, the buy side of things is going to be quite interesting to see how all of that shakes out. I don't even know that I could go into presuming how that's going to play out, because there's a lot of different scenarios where, will we see buyer's agents going to a flat fee service? Will we see? I read an article the other day about mortgage lenders getting into the deal of writing contracts, and will mortgage lenders start bringing in licensees to put deals together, because you got to have the financing first. So that's a first step for the buyer anyway. And now can they capitalize as an avenue stream to say, Hey, we've got this in-house agent here that is happy. You go out and find the house that you want. You bring it back to my in-house agent, and for a flat fee as part of your mortgage, we will, we'll pay the, we'll have them write up the contract for you. I just think that there's going to be a ton of different ways that buyer's agents can capitalize on this market. That's one of the things that I think is actually exciting about this change. One of the ways that I think a lot of buyer's agents aren't looking at this is they've been so comfortable just allowing listing agents to dictate how much they're going to make, because, okay, that's the number that's in the MLS. That's how much they're offering to pay me. Well, as a buyer's agent, I would much rather know I have an agreement up front with my client to say, I know I'm getting paid X amount of dollars or X percent. And yes, we might be getting a certain percentage from the seller, but I know what I'm getting because that's what the agreement that I have with my buyer. And to me, it just seems like it's so much cleaner, and by having all of those agreements in place ahead of time, as opposed to me showing 45 houses for my buyer to pick out one. And then I just hopefully, I'm just walking into it going, oh man, I hope the listing agent has decided to give me a fair, a fair percentage on this commission. Whereas if I'm working just for my buyer, I know, hey, this is what my fee is, and this is what I'm going to get.
I guess the challenge is getting to that agreement. And so how do you envision that changing? Obviously, a lot of the buy-side agents right now are buying leads on Zillow and Realtor.com and other lead generation platforms. And the devil's always in the details, but would this not seem like a big gamble post-NAR settlement?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that the day of me getting a Zillow lead, going and showing one house and writing an offer and collecting a full commission on the deal, I think that's going to be pretty limited. I don't think we'll see those those gold nuggets laying on the ground anymore. I think for the positive, it's going to create the necessity for agents to build relationships with their buyers. Because if you're going to ask them to pay a commission, you have to be able to share your value with them. This is what I offer. This is what I bring to the table. This is how I can help you. And for all of these services, this is what my fee is. I think a lot of people think that it's going to hurt buyers because they're going to be on the hook for paying for service. I think that it's going to potentially help a lot of buyers because it's going to create a better service, a better representation than what a lot of buyers may be getting right now.
Let's talk a little bit about how this settlement potentially affects your business going forward. I want to be very clear. You are running a full service brokerage and you are on the sell side. This is not a discount brokerage, nothing like that. I think agent commissions starting in July could be significantly disrupted. And a lot of your competitors are going to have to rethink their strategies, right? So I imagine most of them are going to see a lot more security on the listing side. And so strategy-wise, how are you thinking about a post-settlement world should the court approve the settlement agreement?
Yeah, I think you are going to see the industry is definitely going to favor or desire the listings more than picking up buyer clients. but I don't necessarily, I don't know how that's all going to work or how it's going to shake out. Because you've got a lot of potential in buyers agents. There's so many different ways that buyers agents can try and pick up and create income, but it's not going to look the same as it has in the past. And so, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see how traditional brokerages kind of pivot. And what they continue to charge. You know, the NAR did leave an opening because they didn't say that listing agents couldn't collect and offer compensation. They just said that they couldn't put it in the MLS. And so it makes me wonder if there won't be, you know, conversation, communication behind the scenes for listings. And I just don't, I don't know how all of that's going to play out. But again, it goes back to why I love the model that we have is that it's just very transparent. There is no conversation outside of everything's official, everything's on paper, and everything's done up front. Everybody knows who's representing who and who's getting paid and how are they getting paid. And so I think that is going to be something that the traditional brokerage model is going to have a little bit of a challenge ahead to navigate the waters of this change. And, you know, what does the income look like from their buyer's agents? I think listing agents, man, they got to be loving this because they can look at it and really capitalize.
I think it's telling that you guys didn't do a discount brokerage model and you seem really focused on clear and consistent communication with the seller clients. And I imagine there's quite a bit of education on the buy side as well. I think that this is going to be a really wild time for buy side agents. And so you now throw in the logistical question of how these buyer agents are going to have to track down, let's say, 4 or 5 clients a month and get them all to sign agreements with them. And then they have to negotiate the terms. Do they start with a 3% fee and hope that the client bites? Do they have a different model? I mean, unfortunately, they just don't have a lot of leverage here. And so the buyer could just as easily go to the sell side agent, the listing agent directly, or maybe they could find a discount brokerage offering a flat rate for their services. Maybe there's an a la carte service that suddenly, you know, appears in the marketplace. I just feel like there's going to be so much innovation that we're going to see in the next few years and that it's going to come on the buy side of the deal. And we really haven't seen a whole lot of innovation. I think it's fair to say because the NAR rules, and let's not forget the local and state associations, you know, they've enforced this idea, true or not, that this is a seller's responsibility. And so if the mentality of the buyer is, look, I'm not going to pay for the service out of pocket, because there are only 8 homes on the market in my area that work for me, and paying this guy or this gal $10,000 out of pocket hugely changes my purchasing power. That changes things, and it changes things on the financing side as well. And so any thoughts about maybe some of the new models that might appear on the buy side? I think we could see salary agents, maybe the Redfin model takes off a little bit more, right?
That's the one that is sticking out in my head the most, in that I could see us, I could see brokerages, you know, that are concentrating heavy on the listings, but then having in-house agents that were there to, you know, take inbound calls and to go and show the houses, put deals together, but are salaried so that they're trying to minimize that amount that they're collecting from the buyer or have to collect from the buyer. I could definitely see that. We kind of talked about earlier the idea of a buyer agent that is a la carte. They have a menu of services and you can select from these services at these rates and this is what it would cost, or you know, you can forego some of the services that you're comfortable with.
Yeah, and one of the bigger challenges here is this idea of steering. The whole premise of the DOJ getting involved is because they felt like this arrangement where the seller makes an offer of compensation to the buyer agent, and the situations in which the seller was offering very little to the buyer resulted them in the buy side just not showing the property. And you can't have a new model that replaces that sort of thing, but also still allows that practice to continue. And so maybe there are a la carte offerings, but anyone offering these untested models, they're going to really have to tread carefully, and they're going to do a lot of due diligence and make sure that they're complying with RESPA and all of the local laws. And it's just, it's tough because on the buy side, a lot of agents, you know, they get their start there and their relationship with the client just isn't that sticky. And so if I find an agent through a Zillow lead as a consumer, I probably look at their relationship as a little bit more transactional. And so having said all that, I think there's a huge opportunity for the lending community. And as you said earlier, they already have the finances in front of them. They have the pre-approval from the buyer. They know what the client can spend on agent fees if they have to. They already have connections with other agents and other referral partners. And now they're kind of in the driver's seat. And so could the LO reach out to an agent they know and say, look, my client can pay a flat fee, let's say $1,000, and I'm handling most of the specs on this deal, but I need you to do a couple things. I need you to check in on some due diligence, make sure there are no screw-ups, right? Kind of hold their hand a little bit, act as more of an advisor. But the heavy lifting isn't really necessary here, right? And you know, maybe the LO knows a real estate attorney who will do it, or something could be developed in-house on the lender's side, right? There's already talk about LOs becoming licensed as real estate agents. And we've seen in the past also agents that are licensed as LOs, right? There are just so many different permutations here. There are so many potential threats as well for buy-side agents that they never really had to deal with before.
Yeah. But I think for the buyers themselves, I do see that there's possibilities to still get the deals done and not have to be out of pocket on the cost of their agent, because there are avenues. It's just a matter of putting that negotiation together and putting in the time, putting the deal together. And it's all just conversation. You know, at the end of the day, the seller really should only be worried about their bottom line. You know, whatever numbers are coming into that, into the contract, they're able to, you know, if somebody comes in and says, hey, I want you to pay $5,000 to my buyer's agent, the seller is fully within their, you know, rights and ability to say, hey, that's perfectly fine, but we want to offset the purchase price by $5,000. And so I think there's lots of possibility that way. I know a lot of agents or some agents are going to scoff at that and say, well, you're going to run into appraisal issues. Yes, that could be a possibility. You may run into appraisal issues because you're increasing a purchase price. But again, it's part of the deal. And that's just part of keeping the deal together or putting the deal together, that you may have some hurdles to cross. And so, but I don't think that it's going to be the be all end all for buyer's agency. I don't think that it's the buyers are having to, I heard earlier that the only people who lose out of this are the buyers, because they're either not going to get represented or they're having to pay, out of pocket for their agency. But I look at that and go, it's a service that they're getting. It's a service that they're choosing to get. So I have a hard time going, oh, that they shouldn't have to pay that. Because it really is, a buyer's agent brings so much more to a transaction than just the ability to bring the buyer to the transaction. And I think that's what a lot of agents think that, and you kind of alluded to it as well about, you know, agents refusing to show other properties. Well, that's getting back to the idea that the value of the buyer's agent is only to bring buyers to the property. And that's why sellers offer co-op compensation, which in fact, sellers don't offer the co-op compensation. Their listing agent offers that compensation. The seller has already paid it. And so I just think there's a lot of dynamics at play there that could be really good for a lot of parties involved, so long as people are just having open and honest conversations about it. You know, the days of, oh, I'm getting paid by the listing agent, but I'm working for the buyer are probably going away. And so we need to start having conversations with our clients about how we're getting paid and the service that we're going to provide so that they know and they can make a choice. Does that mean you're going to get a deal every time? Probably not. There's going to be some buyers out there that are going to go, hey, it's not worth it to me. I'll shop around. Hey, if we're shopping around, that means we're having a more efficient market. That's free markets, and we got to love that. And so I think there's just a lot of potential for buyers agents to really change their model, change their business, and really capitalize. You want to build a big business, put together some flat rate agents that are only charging this amount of dollars to write your offer. Think outside the box, but I think there's definitely some business to be had there.
I think, Pete, like lost in some of this, in my opinion, is that there's been some resistance to change the overall real estate agent model from the sell side. You know, I know that a lot of sell side agents do not want to work with a client who doesn't have representation because it's a lot of hassle, it's a lot of extra work, and they feel like there's a higher likelihood that the deal falls through. And so they want to deal with professionals. They want to deal with trained agents. They want more certainty that the deal closes because, well, they don't get paid until the deal closes, right? And I think on the other side, I do expect that there's going to be a little bit more dual agency, depending on the state. Not in every state is this legally allowed, but in areas in which it is, I think we'll see buyers who go up unrepresented or underrepresented. And maybe they call up the listing agent and say, hey, you know, I see that you have this deal. I don't want to pay 10, 15 grand, whatever it is, out of pocket. I'm going to handle my side of it. I already have a pre-approval. The finances are good. You don't have to worry about that. But I need you to handle the paperwork, and I don't need you to represent my interests. But as an agent on the sell side, in your experience, is there resistance from sell side agents to not work with individual buyers who go unrepresented?
There could be. I don't know. Again, there's a lot of different factors that can play into, you know, making those decisions. From our standpoint, you know, we are able and we're allowed to be dual agents. We don't prefer it because I think it minimizes the service that I'm allowed to give to my clients. Or you really just become transactional at that point. And so, you know, I'm not able to really share my full opinion and perspective with the clients I'm representing. So we try in our office as much as possible to pass along leads from our listing to other agents in our office that can be a buyer's agent to try and avoid things like that. So it wouldn't surprise me to see listing, you know, for brokerages to kind of embrace that model of having buyer's agents that are teamed up with some of their bigger listing producers and, you know, work out some deal that way that the listing agent, if they have people that are calling to look at it, that they've got people that can step up and help in that way. But again, I think that's just one other possible business model that could help to kind of offset, you know, that idea of that we're going to see and that there has to be more dual agency because of it. I think there's going to be some definite opportunities there for buyers and listing agents to work on that side.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I think my overall hot take here, if I have one, and it's not actually very hot, it's just that the majority of transactions, the vast majority of transactions will remain where a seller compensates the buy side agent because it's smart, relatively frictionless business, and they're going to bake it into the price. And there's still way more demand than there are homes for sale. And I think, you know, where the buyer can't hit the appraisal or something comes up in inspection, I think that's where we're going to see a lot more room for negotiation. But for the most part, the vast majority of transactions, I don't know about putting a number on it, like what, 80%, 85%, whatever it is, it's going to be similar to how it's always been done. But maybe that other 15%, 20%, whatever it ends up being, I think that's where we're going to see a lot of wild stuff over the next couple of years. And we're going to see a lot of new models and just probably more litigation, right? But that's just my take. So, Pete, I want to hand it off to you. Any final thoughts on what we might see going forward?
You know, I think you're spot on there. I think that the majority of business is going to continue to just do what we've done. You know, I hope that this leads to more transparency and more clarity in who's working for who and who's paying what in the transaction. You know, I think for us, it's been really great because we have great conversations with agents that are on the other side, explaining to them how they get paid, how the conversation that we've had with our sellers, and kind of working towards that fair agreement for everybody. And so, you know, I think that's going to be a really good way forward for a lot of people. It is going to have some definite growing pains here as things get implemented, as we see the co-op compensation field go away from the MLS. Man, I think that is going to be a wild week or month to see how that all shakes out and the conversations that come out of that. But overall, I think it's really a great move. I think it's the move in the right direction. You know, years ago they separated agency for seller listing agents representing sellers, buyers agents representing buyers. That compensation never followed that model, and now I think this is really NAR stepping in and Department of Justice stepping in to make that move for the industry. And I think that's a great step. I think it's a great place to be, and I'm looking forward to where the market's going to go.
Cool. Well, I think, you know, no matter how this shakes out, we're going to be pretty busy in mid-July. And so, Pete, I want to thank you for joining me today. We're going to put a link in the show notes to 3% Listing Co. and Pete's LinkedIn as well. So, Pete, you might get a couple more connections than you perhaps bargained for.
Hey, I'll take it, man. That sounds great to me.
All right, awesome. Thanks, everybody. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show and leave a comment. And make sure to tune in tomorrow for more news and insight.